pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on this Thursday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Coming up on the program today, we got Paul DeMarco coming up in about 30 minutes from now. I think you get to this, we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about it, but the redistricting injunction and what looks, this is playing out exactly like it did a couple of weeks, or I guess about a month ago, when Justice Thomas vacated the Supreme Court, the lower court on Milligan and remanded it. This is playing out just like, this injunction is not allowing the so-called 6-1 map to go forward. It just seems like we're going through the formality of undoing what is just sort of a petty, angry 3-judge panel. Maybe there'll be future MSNBC contributors or something. Future University of Alabama law professor, Anna Manasco. We'll talk to Paul about that. April Murray Fogle, because you never could have enough April Murray Fogle on FM Talk 1065. And then it's been a little bit, but we're getting back into rotation. Our friend from Pathway Church, Travis Johnson, in the 11 o'clock hour. Been traveling a little bit, but we talked a lot yesterday about sort of faith and the role it plays in politics and when it comes up, and just furthering that discussion a little bit. But we'll hit on that with Travis Johnson in the 11 o'clock hour. 251-343-0106 is the text line once again. If you want to be in touch with the program, hit us up there. Let us know what is on your mind. Just a couple updates. Governor Ivey's extended one of the deadlines. They're moving to get back to the 6-1 map and relying on the Supreme Court, which can be risky. But there's just this belief out there. I don't think they would have ventured this far with the Alabama legislature and the governor without at least thinking that this is the direction they're going to go to the 6-1 map. But I want to talk about the 6-1 map. And lay out a hypothetical for you. Now, we spent a lot of time yesterday, and a lot of you are not going to like this discussion, but it doesn't matter. There's a lot of enthusiasm right now for Democrats. What if we go 6-1? You have the AL2 district, which is no longer Mobile, but it becomes Wetumpka South, all of Montgomery County. You don't have any of Prattville or Autauga County. The entirety of Montgomery and into the Wiregrass. And let's just say, because this happened 18 years ago. It's been a while. You had Barack Obama on the ballot, but there was a lot of Democrat enthusiasm out there. And in Alabama, we vote straight ticket. I mean, you could vote for other offices, but I think a lot of people vote straight ticket. A lot of Democrats show up on November 3rd. You have a candidate for the Wiregrass, Brett Marcus, And you have, let's say, Shamari Figures, who's done what he needed to do. He's bought off Joe Reed. He's bought off all the Democratic Party bosses. They got they have maximized their get out the vote effort. And the 6-1 map winds up being a 5-2 map. The Democrats pull it off. And just wait, that sounds crazy because that district, it was Bobby Bright in 08. And then Martha Roby wins it in 2010 and during the Tea Party wave. She holds on to it for a while. And in 2020, it becomes Barry Moore. Then they change the lines, and it's Shamari Figures. Then they go back to the old lines. And let's say you have a Rhett Marcus, and you have a incumbent Shamari Figures running, because that's where he's qualified, against Representative Marcus. A guy from the Wiregrass, where the population's not in that district. I mean, Coffee County Enterprise, you know, decent-sized city relative to the rest of Alabama. But Republican turnout's a little depressed. And Shamari Figures can raise $1 million by just walking to his mailbox because he's an incumbent congressman. That's sort of how that works, guys. That you just have these associations and these, you know, entities that you're a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. We're giving you money. What happens? So it's going to be a hard election cycle. But, I mean, that's a total hypothetical long shot. But what would it mean if somehow a Democrat were to win that district again? And it like I said, it happened 18 years ago, 2008. Barack Obama was on the ballot. That was a key distinction there. But what it should tell us is when people are energized to vote Montgomery, then, you know, things happen. And you had kind of a depressed turnout for Republicans. George W. Bush, it was the end of that. No one was really excited about John McCain. But everybody was excited about Barack Obama for whatever reason. I think it could be a problem. Republicans got a lot of defense to play. Even in Alabama. I mean, that's a crazy thing to think about, but it's true. I say that, you know, there's just a couple places in the state where statewide we're going to be fine as Republicans. But there's these pockets where demographics have changed, primarily Madison County. And the enthusiasm gap, and that was so obvious last Tuesday. So we gotta have this conversation. What changes? Now, it's a long way to November. Could something change to get Republicans more engaged, perhaps? Does Donald Trump need to come? I don't know. There's some talk about that. I keep getting asked, do I think that Trump would do a rally in Alabama? But do we think that Barry Moore, John Wall, and Tommy Tuberville need, those are his three candidates. Do we think they need that? Because the outcomes, the vote tallies suggest otherwise. Even if they were down, it doesn't seem likely he would come to rescue them either. But every time Donald Trump plays in Alabama, sometimes, well, not every time, but sometimes it doesn't work out. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program. How many times have we heard this? We're about to score the touchdown here. We're at the goal line. What am I talking about? Iran. Iran deal. I a couple of things that are probably holding that back right now. I think they have agreed on some of the nuclear ambitions with Iran. But what the Iranians want in return is tolls on the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't think that's going to fly. That's sort of the hang-up right now, is what I'm hearing indirectly from White House sources. But we're so close, guys. Like I said, none of this would matter from a political, at least an election standpoint, if it weren't impacting the economy. If it weren't causing the prices to go up. If it weren't, you know, people know when they go to the gas pump. There's something going on. I don't like it. Why is this costing me $140 to fill up my pickup truck now? Well, Donald Trump did away with the kill switch. No, that's not it. We know why. It's the unintended consequences of the Iran military strikes and the cost. And regardless if you think it's the right or wrong thing, there's just a number of people who are never going to, they don't care. They just don't care either way. You know, if this weren't impacting gas prices, I don't think it would matter. In some ways, it'd probably be celebrated. All of you guys out there who are kind of, you know, I don't like these foreign entanglements, your voices would just be crowded out. It would be seen as a good thing that the big bad orange man has neutralized the threat to the globe. But that's what it was going to take to salvage anything out of this cycle, was just untold economic prosperity. And this was a, I don't know if it was a miscalculation, what it was. But if you were banking on that, you were banking on preserving some sort of majority in either chamber, you would have not done a strike on Iran, knowing that it would have an adverse impact on the economy. So it looks a little doom and gloomy out there. I ain't going to lie to you, boys and girls. I'm not quite to wave. I don't think we're at that point. I don't think you have the civic engagement that you once had for another 2006 or 2010 type wave election right now. Everybody's pretty much decided it's just there's a handful of seats and the margins are so thin that those handful of seats will shift the power on Capitol Hill. Text line 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Long before you take this cowboy's hat. Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I get.
Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Thursday morning, Paul DeMarco up in the next segment. We'll talk a little bit about the election results. I haven't had him on. But primarily, we'll hit on this redistricting discussion. Tim, Jeff, coach is going to beat Doug Jones like a drum. Probably so. No, I'm not worried about statewide elections. It's the more local elections. You don't know how certain communities have changed, all this economic, quote-unquote, economic development we've engaged in. We want people to move here from other states. They like the idea of a state with less regulations and whatnot, but they also... They don't believe in the same like kind of social values, cultural values. They want more government. Just not as much government as California. But you're right. I think statewide, this is, we're going to be fine. I think locally, there's some bumpy roads ahead that could affect us statewide, just with some of the Senate seats, state Senate seats, and possibly a congressional seat. I mean, they're talking about beating Terry Sewell, but I don't know, guys. Not this year. Not in the 7th congressional district. Well, you know that black voting age population has diminished, and that's the Democrat core group. No, and just there's so much enthusiasm on the Democrat side right now. There's problems. And I don't know what the answer is because everything is sort of predicated on the very, you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C., not what's going on in Montgomery or what's going on, you know, in City Hall or at the county courthouse. That's the world that we live in. Ultra Runner, scary hypothetical, scary numbers. Can some of the Democrat surge be explained by 2022 Democrat voting in Republican primaries but staying in their party at this time? Is there a way to disentangle the crossovers? Crossover voting is the least of the worries right now. You had exceptionally high Democrat turnout. Democrats voted in their own primary. And you won't have that problem in the runoff because if you voted in a Democratic primary, you're ineligible to vote in the Republican runoffs or vice versa. That's state law. And Democrats came out to vote for Democrats. Now, I think that that's the least of our worries. I think the worry, the ultra-runner, the problem is Republicans just aren't voting. There's an enthusiasm gap. It started showing up last year in the polling when you had, you know, even or the very first of this year, starting in January. I was at a forestry event down at the beach. We had a pollster come talk about this, and wow, 70% undecided, 50% undecided at the very top of the ticket. And what is that? That's a lack of engagement. I mean, things don't seem like they're going well. And unfortunately, in our society, we tend to view our politics like we do our favorite sports teams. And if your team is losing, are you gonna be watching all of the updates and all of the news? If Alabama goes on a losing streak or Auburn continues a losing streak, are you tuning in for every coach's show, every, I don't know, podcast, whatever? No. Like, I don't want to sit here and watch a team get beat. And I think there's something to that that's applicable to politics, that things aren't going great. Trump hasn't delivered us prosperity that was promised. I don't want to watch the news where they just, even Fox News is beating up on him or whatever. I'm going to tune that out. And that's sort of what you should anticipate with the election cycle, and last Tuesday's voting returns back that up. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh, so right. My Dixieland line.
More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, get in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with the program. So to come on the program, April Marie Fogle, about an hour from now, about 2 hours from now, from Pathway Church. My friend Travis Johnson will be with us. So please make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now, it's been about a week or so, but Paul DeMarco joins us on the line. Paul, how are you?
Good morning. Hope you and your listeners well this Thursday morning.
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. Let's start here. Just sort of your reaction to the election last Tuesday. My initial, and then it's been a few days, and some of the turnout. I mean, some of the margins were a lot more than I expected, but the turnout for Republicans is a problem.
Look, I'm up here in Jefferson County. I know exactly what you're talking about. We're watching, and I think as you talked about earlier, you know, it's history. The enthusiasm for the party who doesn't have the president is always there's more enthusiasm, the opposition, and so in one sense we shouldn't be surprised. You know, the question is, you know, what will this carry over for the fall? I'm not worried that Alabama will not have every constitutional officer in the state. Alabama will still be one of the most Republican states, but you just don't take it for granted. You look what happens in Georgia. They had some public service commission seats. They had they have the two Senate seats. You had a race over in Mississippi. So you don't take it for granted and think, oh, it's this way. It will always be this way. You look at that seat up in Madison County. Obviously, we watch what happens here in Jefferson County. So no one should take anything for granted. Republican leadership should sit down and say, what do we have to do to work on the enthusiasm to get voters out? Democrats are doing whatever it needs to take to get their voters out. And in Alabama, Republican Party has got to be focused on that.
Well, and real quick, Mississippi, I mean, some of these Democrat, like, political strategists think that some of these Mississippi seats are in play. Is that, I mean, does that sound like something?
I talked to a good friend of mine who's a former legislator over in Mississippi. You know, they do have this candidate for Senate. I think he wanted a U.S. attorneyship. It got blocked. I think he's from kind of the Columbus Tupelo area. But I still think, and they still think the Republicans going to win, but the U.S. Senate seat, they do have a legitimate candidate, and there's going to be a lot of money spent over there. But how are they going to spread their money? Are they going to spread that money in Texas? I mean, as you well know, it's all national now. Where do you spend the money? Do you spend it in North Carolina? Do you spend it in Ohio? Do you spend it in Texas? How much money are Democrats going to spend in national money in Mississippi?
Well, and you know, if it's
cheap, or in Alabama for that matter.
Well, if it's cheap enough, the national enthusiasm is Tallarico, but do you spend big there when you could go into Mississippi for a fraction of the cost and try to pick that off? Now, I don't think Alabama is reachable, but I do think in this, I mean, but they now, I guess they tell us this every year about Mississippi, right?
When they said it about Texas, and now they got a guy who's a vegetarian and won't eat beef brisket. So, I mean, is that guy going to win in Texas?
Well, he's got a lot of other, besides veganism, he's got a lot of other things that are going to weigh him down. But I don't view him as a legitimate candidate. He's going to win Austin, and we'll see where he goes from there. But, I just, it's not – He's Beto 2.0.
Look, on May 28th, I think National Democrats are going to not be looking to spend their money in Alabama or Mississippi. They're going to be looking at Ohio and North Carolina.
Ohio and North Carolina are definitely winnable for those guys.
Yeah. And look, don't get me wrong. I mean, we saw this during COVID with Doug Jones and the amount of money that got spent in get out the vote efforts in 2020. I mean, it was ungodly the amount of money that got spent here on get out the vote efforts. And you will see a lot of it, but not to the extent that I will make a difference as long as, you know, Republican voters get out there and see, you know, the differences in what could happen.
There's a lack of Republican voter enthusiasm, and it showed up on Tuesday. Democrats are red hot right now over the Louisiana decision. They may not fully understand it, but they're being told they're trying to keep you from voting. They're trying to stop you from voting. And I think that messaging works for those guys.
Look, I know some folks that were on vacation and they didn't do absentee ballot. They just who are Republican voters. They just like, it's a primary. I'll vote in the fall, but they don't sense any sort of worry. Like now, again, if you had somebody that was going to come in and say, like up in New York, they're going to transfer property from the landlord to the tenant, then they may, you know, wake up and say, wait a second, this is an election that I've got to get out. But the Republican voters in Alabama don't like, it's going to continue to be that. And that's part of it, in addition to the national effort, the anti-Trump that every Democrat uses in every race.
Joined by Paul DeMarco here on the program. What's your take on this lawfare? It's clearly, to me at this point, lawfare from these three judges, Stanley Marcus, Terry Moore, and Anna Manasco. They're just trying to block and impede as much as they can, it looks like.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the law, and the Supreme Court ruling was pretty clear. I mean, and I've talked to a lot of folks. You're a lawyer. Tell me. And I said, I mean, let's just get back to basics. It says race neutral districts. You can get through the entire order from the Supreme Court in the Louisiana case, Cali, but it says race neutral districts. I mean, is there anybody on either side, any party, any race that can't say that these two districts we have in Alabama are based on race? They're both based on race. And we can talk about communities of interest in the Black Belt District, but I mean, when you have suburban portions of Jefferson County, like Homewood and Hoover, share a district with Selma, and you look at how Jefferson County, you have all the suburbs are in the sixth, but Birmingham is in the seventh, you know, that's based on race. And then you look at your district, the CD down there with Chemouri Figures, and where it starts in Mobile and goes to Phoenix City, that one was also based on race. So if they're based on race, then isn't that contrary to what the law is in the land now? That is the law of the land. Well, this Louisiana case.
Now, the verbiage in their injunction, they claim that's a race-blind map. And they accuse the legislature of drawing drawing the map with some kind of racial animus, or, you know, that they woke up, Governor Ivey said, hey, guys, go draw me a bigoted map, congressional map. And I don't know why they felt necessary to put that in the injunction, but they did. And I find that a little unbecoming.
Well, I mean, here's the problem is ultimately the United States Supreme Court is going to say this is the law of the land. And I think they just did this in Mississippi where there was a ruling. They said, no, this is the law of the land now. You have to have race-neutral districts. And so I think that's ultimately where we're heading. I would be shocked if we're still not going to have a primary election on August the 11th with a 6-1 map.
Yeah, it's a kind of foolish to think that this injunction is going to stand and we're going to live under this 5-2 setup for the foreseeable future.
Well, I mean, it would be, again, I'm reading the United States Supreme Court ruling, race-neutral district. It would be contrary to where the Supreme Court is now. So the court has the injunction, but, you know, I think we all anticipate, based on the Supreme Court ruling in Louisiana, they're going to say that doesn't fit where the law is on May the 26th, 2026. We're not pre, we are now. And when these 5-2 map was drawn, that was before the Supreme Court ruled. But now that they've ruled and it's clear, seems like to everybody, that's where we're going to be. And there will be an August 11th election, and you will end up with a 6-1 map at the minimum. Again, I think ultimately in Alabama, 7-0.
What is the motivation here? I mean, other than it being a partisan motivation, why are these judges doing this, you think?
You know, I do think you saw the original round where they went back and said, the legislature, you didn't do what we asked of you. Then you had the special, you know, there's just been a lot of back and forth. So, you know, I think it will be very interesting to read what Justice Thomas, let's see, it's June the 1st at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, right? Isn't that when the challengers are supposed to? So,
and it just feels a lot like the last go around when they vacated all of this.
Yeah.
Justice Thomas put out a deadline. I want to hear from, you know, both sides and Vito, and then shortly thereafter.
Oh, it was like, wasn't it like within an hour?
Yeah. Within an hour. We, so like June 1st, be watching sometime Monday afternoon, right?
I would think by June 1st at 6 o'clock. We'll have an answer, and this all may be put to bed. And if precedent is precedent, right?
Yeah, and like I think we've gone so far down this path, and you know, nothing's certain, but they have a pretty good idea where this is going. That this isn't going to, like, we're not going to get stuck with this and have to have a do-over and have what happened on May 19th. That's not going to count. There's a lot of confusion right now, how to raise money, et cetera. But the odds are this is going to wind up being the way the legislature had kind of laid it out, right?
That's what it appears. And, you know, I don't see Justice Thomas coming in and himself ordering some sort of remand and then asking the legislature to go back and doing anything. Now, I still think that the law is no race neutral. I mean, the districts are supposed to be race neutral, and it depends on the relief the state is asking. In this case, the state is asking for the relief to go back to the, you know, 6-1, not to a 7-0. And I think a lot of folks are like, 7-0, 7-0. Well, that's not the relief that's being asked for. So I think for now, you will see after 6 o'clock on Monday, the court coming back and saying that. And then where do we go after that? I think you get the August 11th election, and then, you know, what happens in the 6 months after that? Does a Governor Tuberville call a special session, or do we, you know, where do you go after that for folks say?
Do you foresee, let's say June 1st comes, will this lower court be able to do anything else to meddle in this process, you think?
I got to think, you know, this is the second time if the Supreme Court says this is the law of the land and this is what it'll be. I've got to think we're done there. But, you know, I always tell people, you want to file a lawsuit, all you need is, you know, the filing fee and a complaint, and you can file it. Anybody could come back and challenge anything. But ultimately, the United States Supreme Court will have the final say, regardless of who challenges or what. And if for a second time, you would think the Supreme Court says this is the law of the land, but anybody can turn around and challenge.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, they're going to challenge it because Supreme Court say, look, you guys got to knock this off. We're not going to go play this whack-a-mole game every time we say something and then you turn around and do something and then we have to say something again. I mean, is there a way to, like, You gotta pump the brakes on this, and we'll argue this in the next, you know, beyond the 2026 elections.
Well, you saw that. Remember last time with the Kavanaugh said, wait a second, we're going to let move forward. I mean, that's how we ended up with the 5-2 map. There was an appeal to the Alabama Supreme Court, and there was a put it off. And then the court was like, no, we're going to let it. We're going to let it stand. The United States Supreme Court said, we're going to let this map stand. And they did let it stand until this recent ruling. So, yes, I mean, ultimately, the Supreme Court can get involved as much as they and depending on, the, you know, there are boundaries, obviously, depending on what's appealed, what's being challenged. But based on where we're at right now and Justice Thomas and what he did, you know, 2 weeks ago now, God, time flies. It appears that we're going to have this August 11th if he says what he said in other other rulings, and again, including one that recently just happened in Mississippi and the challenges in Tennessee. Now, look, in Florida, I think there's some more fighting about those five new districts down there that will end up in the United States Supreme Court. This is going to continue. This was when Holder and the former attorney general said, we're going to start doing this all around the country. And that's where it's gotten us to where we are to this point. And ultimately, where you're going to see these maps change around the country with this new law that is the law of the land now, race neutral districts when it comes to gerrymandering.
Paul, folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
Find me on X at Paul_DeMarco.
Paul, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right, Paul DeMarco, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Good morning, Jeff. Granny Governor owes Trump a makeup rally at the battleship. I say bring it on. We'll never know really what happened with that canceled event at the battleship. Come to find out, like months later, though, then Ivy took the fall for that. Then it probably wasn't Kay Ivey who got in the way of that. I mean, just look at the politics at that time, and you could probably figure that out. Jason, what was going on? I think it was a municipal election. And the idea that Trump would come to Mobile was something that scared a lot of people running in that cycle. Killer bees. If Iran wanted a nuclear bomb, they'd just buy one. The war making America suffer is BS. Yeah, I don't think you just go on eBay and buy a nuclear weapon, though. But Iran, here's the thing. This is the talking point that doesn't do it for me. Well, they chant death to America, death to Israel in the streets. Yes, that is correct. But it's sort of very Orwellian. They create an enemy. They do it for their domestic politics. They manufacture the great Satan. Well, the great Satan actually exists, but it's not as bad as it's being made out by the regime. And what does that do? It kind of solidifies the support for the regime. There's a rally around the flag. There's a nationalism, a common people against a common enemy. And yes, they chant death to America, but do they really mean it? Maybe if they had their way, but are they capable of it? Do we think that the Iranian regime, and let's go back like to February of this year, was capable of death to America. Now, clearly they were doing some death to Israel stuff by funding their proxies with Hamas and Hezbollah. But was that, and maybe y'all tell me, is that in your mind enough to trigger U.S. involvement to the extent that we're involved now? To the extent we're not just involved with weaponry, but to the extent we're involved economically, does that rise to the occasion? Now, look, a lot of you probably say yes, that they were on their way. But then you take yourself out of the equation and kind of look at look, you could say people are stupid or whatever, uneducated, or as toothless a babber, or not toothless babber, but Bobby Issue says that they're just can't read beyond the sixth grade reading level, but their vote counts as much as yours does. And you got to look at it from that through that prism. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
He said, "You don't have to call me Mister. The whole world.